let's spend all day talking about Nate Pearson.
No, maybe not. Maybe not. We will deal with Nate Pearson's demotion to the minor leagues in a few minutes. Tom Glavine will join us as well, Braves analyst. And Hall of Fame pitcher. And, of course, the Jays, 5-3 winners over the Atlanta Braves last night in the first of three games. The second game goes tonight. And Mr. Barker, Robbie Ray, based on what happened on Sunday and based on the news about Nate Pearson going down and based on the situation this team finds itself in terms of pitching, I don't even want to begin to think what this season would be like if Robbie Ray wasn't the Robbie Ray he is right now and was the Robbie Ray we saw when the Blue Jays acquired him.
Yeah, with you on that. Look, you could argue he's their best pitcher. What he does on the mound, he talks about a lot after the game on his Zoom calls about being 0-1 instead of 1-0, putting hitters on the defense. You could argue that's what he does a ton of. Last night he was 17 for 23, faced 23 batters. He threw 17 strike ones. You know, that allows him to use his secondary pitches. Doesn't have to be as fine with them. His breaking ball was pretty good yesterday. He could strike somebody out with it. He could get ahead with it. He could get back and counts with it. His slider had more bite to it. You know, when he starts that down the middle and he can back foot it to a right-handed hitter, that's the one pitch that's been giving him trouble all year. First inning, looked like him and Reese McGuire were having a little tough time getting on the same page. Mechanically, could have been a little bit of mechanics too. You know, that in a rush down the slope, he talks about a lot. You know, he's a max effort guy. And whenever you're max effort, sometimes things get ahead of your arm. Your arm starts to drag, ball doesn't go where you want it to go. He gets it back on the tracks quicker than he's been getting it back on the tracks. And you see the results there. It is pounding the zone early, expanding with a secondary pitch, not being afraid to spin something to get back into counts, do enough change-ups to keep them honest between the mile per hour. Look, that's what you do on the road. You keep your team in it long enough till a pretty good lineup can figure out how to score runs and have a huge inning like they did yesterday. And you send nine guys to the game in the eighth inning, a lot of the times you're going to score enough runs to win that game, and that's what they did.
The velo wasn't always there last night. I think his fastball averaged 94.8, which is not horrible, and that's I'm not making the point that there's any concern there. But one of the things I liked about Robbie Ray last night, and this gets to what you said, he did pitch without his best fastball. And again, if you look back to the Robbie Ray we saw last year, that wouldn't have always been the case.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's not always about how hard you throw it. It's where you throw it. And look, the slider hasn't been good all year for him. It was better last night. He talks a lot about where he starts his breaking ball. A lot of the times he'll start his breaking ball a little higher, basically at the hitter's shoulder. He wants that to break off and have a little bit more depth to it, and it has longer for it to break. His slider, he wants to start that more down the middle and have it back foot to a right-handed hitter and go down and away from a left-handed hitter. The one at bat, the third time through to Freddie Freeman, he threw three sliders and a knuckle curveball and got a weak ground out to second base. Robbie Ray do that 2 years ago? Or even last year? Probably not. That's the difference between him this year and the last couple of years is he's got a lot more that he can go to in certain parts of the game. He's not always falling into the same pattern. That pitch sequence for him is a big deal. He runs up there all the time and throw a 98, which is pretty cool that you can do that. Obviously, he wasn't doing that yesterday. But a lot of the times, if you're throwing that enough, hitters start to time that up, and now you have to go to something else. It's just kind of nice to see him be able to do that. Now he's got three or four good pitches he can go to at any time. Keeps the hitters off balance, keeps them guessing. That allows you to go deeper in games. Oh, by the way, he walked a guy. Yeah, he walked one guy. That he hasn't done that in forever. You know, that's the Freddie Freeman. It looked to me like he hit him. So we'll say he didn't walk a guy. You know, he had we'll on this show, we'll go with no walks and 10 strikeouts. And, oh, by the way, the bottom of the order. They always talk about good pitchers pitch to the bottom of the order differently than they do the top of the order. You know what 5-9 in the order for the Braves was last night against Robbie Ray? 0-12. That's how you go deep in games, and that's how you keep your team in it on the road.
590-590 is the text line. It is Walk Off Wednesday, 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Call us. If your call is the best call, we will let you walk us off. A reminder that Blue Jays baseball first pitch tomorrow around 12:20. We will be your pregame show from 12 to 12:20, and then Mr. Barker and myself will be around after the game. We will do a little combo baseball central and Blue Jays talk following the final out of tomorrow afternoon's game. One of the things we talked about going into the year, Kevin, as we looked ahead to the schedule, was the fact that given what we thought might happen in the American League East this year, one of the most important things, and indeed maybe the thing that might at the end of the day separate teams within this division, because I think there are four pretty good teams here right now. We're four teams that are maybe closer than a lot of us thought they were, that being the Yankees. They look really good right now. The Yankees, the Red Sox, Tampa Bay, and Toronto. But it was going to be important that teams do well in interleague games, because this year the AL East is matched up with the National League East, which is a pretty damn good division in terms of pitching. The Jays are now 5-1. And that includes wins, obviously wins over the Braves, and they got wins over a win over the Washington Nationals as well. The National League East teams, we talked about it, they've got some pretty good pitching, but the Blue Jays sure seem to be equal to that right now.
Yeah. Again, it gets back to starting pitching. We can yell and scream about the lineup and what they're doing and you know, how many hits and how aggressive they are and what they need to do. Bottom line, it comes down to starting pitching. When you get quality starting pitching over and over and over again, it gives the lineup enough time to figure out what the other team's trying to do to them, right? The Blue Jays got a young lineup. It takes them a little while to figure out what location they need to go up and try to attack. Is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. good enough all the time to get a ball middle away so he can hit a home run to right field? Probably not. He's a young guy, wants to be aggressive, wants to carry his team a lot of the time. So it takes him a little bit of time to figure out, okay, I don't want to swing at the ball in off the plate until I have to. I want to look for something out over the plate. If this guy's ball is spinning this way, I have to be able to take it. Starting pitching allows you to figure out ways to do those kind of things. And you know, you can argue their defense is better. You know, last night, Jonathan Davis is the only part of the running the bases that wasn't real good. But other than that, the defense was solid. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at first base all of a sudden looks like he's been playing there for 15 years.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, because that play with Freddie Freeman, right, that caught stealing or pickoff, whatever you want to call it,
yep,
that's not easy. For Vladdy to make the move that he made, that's somebody, it looks to me, who's probably taking some notes first base.
Well, what you're talking about is you got a lefty on the mound, you got Freddie Freeman who's trying to go on first move, right? So Robbie Ray picks him off. What a good first baseman does is before he gets the ball, he sets the angle to second base so he doesn't have to do it after he's caught the ball, because it takes up more time. So what's Vladdy do on the throw? Instead of waiting on the throw, he comes and gets the throw, sets the angle to second base. That way all he has to do is catch it, turn, throw a bullet to second base, easy tag out. It's little things like that. It sounds simple, but for a young guy who's trying to learn how to play a certain position, which is first base now is an important position. With all the shifts and where these guys have to throw the baseball from, the balls are going to be all over the map. The first baseman has to have good feet work. They have to have field presence, know where they're at on the field and all these kind of things. It's little things like that are starting to take Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to the next level. And, oh, by the way, yesterday I saw him using the corners of the bag. One of the picks that he had from, I believe it was Kevin Biggio from third base, he actually used the corner of the bag. Why do you use the corner of the bag, Kevin? Because it's easier for you to gain ground on where you want to stretch towards the baseball. If I'm always stretched in the middle of the bag, I'm going to come up short a lot when I go out to stretch towards the baseball. He's starting to play the corners more of the bag, which will tell you, again, he's getting more comfortable getting to the bag soon enough. He's in an athletic position most of the time now. He's hitting, which is a big deal for a young guy, because that's why he's in the big leagues. And now for me, it'll be very hard to all of a sudden, if you want to or you have to put him at third base. Why would you ever do that now?
No, I'm with you.
Yeah.
He's my first baseman, and you figure it out with Rowdy Tellez, frankly. And that's kind of where I am. I'm hoping we don't see him at third base. And you know, the other thing I think, Kevin, and you could certainly speak to this more than I can. And again, we'll get to the phone lines, 416-870-0590, *590, 888-666-0590. The other thing is, I think the rest of the infield has kind of gotten used to having Vladdy at first base. And there is something to be said for that, isn't it? Like, guys kind of get used to what the target looks like. You like to have some familiarity.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I think that they're comfortable with Vladdy knowing that he can pick a ball if they short hop him over there. If they, you know, catch a ball, like say Kevin Biggio catches a ball backhanded down the right field line, he can throw a one hopper to first and be comfortable enough doing that because he knows Vladdy has good enough feet work now. He knows when to stretch. He knows when to think he has to try and pick a baseball. He's got soft enough hands to do it, and he's been doing it. And that adds a little bit more confidence to the guys, especially on the left side of the infield, who are trying to find their way as a defender. That's a very important part of it. And you tip your hats to all the hard work they've been doing. Bo is a halfway decent shortstop now when it comes to throwing and accuracy, right? The play has to be boring. Whenever the ball is or somewhere around you, it has to be that boring above the chest of the first baseman 99% of the time. And Bo's starting to get that because of his feet works a little bit better, because of his how soon he gets rid of the baseball, how hard he knows he has to throw it now. And it's all because of the work they're doing between games. Tip your hat to him.
590-590 is the text line. We will be spending a great deal of time talking about Nate Pearson, obviously. Tom Glavine joined us. We'll talk a little bit about pitching development. A reminder that on Writer's Block today, Jeff Ware will join Stephen Brunt and myself. He is the AAA pitching coach. He's the guy who will be in the dugout tonight when Alec Manoah starts. He's the guy who's seen Nate Pearson as well. So that is on Writer's Block in the 4 o'clock hour as we take a deeper dive into the situation with Nate Pearson. David of the Six, I asked a couple of questions on social media. Are you buying what Robbie Ray is selling? And do you think the Jays are doing right by Nate Pearson? David in the Six, he says, I'm buying whatever Pete Walker sold to Robbie Ray. But he also said, Nate Pearson looks like someone who's been coddled, for lack of a better term, through the minors and hasn't learned how to adjust yet. Maybe that lesson is better learned in the majors. He said, either way, shotgun fastballs don't cut it. Look, we'll talk about this later, Bark, but we're in the same page here. I'm not interested in seeing Nate Pearson go down to the minor leagues and dominate. I'd rather have him up here contributing. I'd rather have him up here trying to figure it out with Pete Walker with Pete Walker as his coach. And as I said, and if he can't pull the load starting, then I would just as soon use him out of the bullpen.
Yeah, I don't know about the bullpen thing. I understand they need to have starting pitching. He is a big deal. He needs to figure out how to be a starter. What he needs to learn, I don't know if he can learn at the minor league level. Pete Walker's not at the minor leagues. It's the mound presence. It's knowing how to go middle away with your best pitch, which is the four-seamer. Can he learn how to do that at the minor league level? We don't know. I know now that he has to figure out a way to do it, because they basically said without saying it that we don't think you're good enough at this level to be a starting pitcher. Now it's up to him to go down there and prove that he is. Because right now you can say they think more highly of Anthony Kay than they do of Nate Pearson. And Nate Pearson now is going to have to go down, take a long look in the mirror and say, what's it going to have to take for me to figure things out and figure out a way to use my best pitch, utilize it to its fullest, which allows me to use my secondary pitches, whatever those are. Now, I don't think he's got four of them. I think at the best right now, he's got two of them, and maybe he needs to work on a third one. Maybe he can do that at the minor league level. But it'll be interesting to see how all the mind things and all the mechanical things, if he can get those in line, and hopefully we see him sooner than later.
Clifton in Etobicoke, you want to talk pitch and development right now, so we won't waste any time. Go ahead, my friend.
Yes, sir, and I think it was the emailer just before Kevin started talking there. Yes, Jeff, regarding the pitch and development. Now, you remember John Farrell on his way out of Toronto? He was critical of the organization and the way they developed their pitchers. And it's been a few years, and it seems like, you know, Farrell has been right, because we haven't seen any difference. Jeff, Marcus Stroman is probably the best pitcher that this organization has produced since Roy Halladay, right?
Can't argue. I mean, yeah. Please continue your thought. I'll try to come up with someone else, but I can't argue that.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, I don't know if you remember when Marcus Stroman came up and he was struggling, they allowed him to stay up here and straighten out whatever, you know, issues he had. Unlike the thoroughbred Aaron Sanchez and this seemingly thoroughbred Nate Peterson, Stroman, you know, like he seemed like a claiming horse. So you didn't have to protect him. So maybe they have this thing backwards. If they allowed these kids to stay at the major leagues and straighten out, you know, like the bugs, like Kevin was saying, like you guys, I mean, you know, they have the best pitching coach on the staff. Like, why would you want to send these guys back down to the minors when the best help is right here? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Now, Clifton, thanks for that. That's one of the points that we have made. And Kevin, I know we're on the same page here. This organization, like I said a while ago, I think ultimately Nate Pearson's development will tell us when this organization is ready to contend to go for a World Series. If they miss a Nate Pearson and he just turns out to be a guy, then this organization, maybe Alek Manoah comes through. But if Nate Pearson turns out to be just simply another guy, a guy who's a fifth starter or a fourth starter, this organization's going to find itself in a position where they're going to have to be spending money to bring in a free agent pitcher. We know how that's worked. It hasn't. Or they're going to have to work around with reclamation projects like Robbie Ray, or they're going to have to trade some of their talent in order to bring in youngish starting pitchers. And you can do that. You know, the Chicago Cubs did that. But this organization doesn't have a track record, Kevin, of attracting free agent pitchers. And, you know, I'm sorry, I'm with Clifton on this. Ultimately, this organization is going to be judged by how it develops its pitchers. And I will caution you this. Putting together a bullpen out of bits and pieces, that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about pitching development.
Yeah, now, we're not in a clubhouse. We don't see how Nate acts, you know, after a bad start or after a bad pitch or after a bad inning. We don't really get to see that. The mound presence part of it is not something that Pete Walker can teach him how to do. That may be the one thing that they're looking at and going, well, at this level, is he okay of getting, you know, his head beat in for four or five starts? Is he able to get past that and then be the Nate Pearson that we all think he's capable of being? Or is he one of those guys that needs to go down and dominate for four or five starts, get confidence that way when it's between the ears, and then come back and then hopefully we're getting some part of what we think Nate can be? It will be an interesting thing to see how the individual handles it, because I don't know if they've said it to his face, but they're coming out and saying it by putting Anthony Kaye as making his next start, of basically saying that you're not good enough to be here right now. Now you need to go down and fix some things, which is all of the things that it takes to be a starting pitching. You could name off any one thing that I just mentioned, the mound presence, the reading bats, the better finish with his mechanics, the self-correcting, all of those things. They have to be corrected before he comes back to the big leagues.
7:20 is the first pitch tonight. It'll be Max Fried on the mound for the Atlanta Braves. Hyun-Jin Ryu takes the mound for the Toronto Blue Jays. The Braves have activated, or will activate, or in the process of activating, Chris Martin, who was a very important part of their bullpen last year. He last appeared in a major league game April 4th. He's been battling some shoulder irritation, so Chris Martin will be back for the Blue Jays, or for the Braves, to make room for him. Bryce Wilson, last night's starter, has been optioned to AAA. Kevin, you mentioned the defense. We saw a couple of plays last night that weren't made by the Braves that I think ultimately cost the Jays, or cost the Braves the game. You know, AJ Minter, that period of uncertainty, that happens. I don't know what Freddie Freeman was thinking of, because that play's right in front of him. No, I understand. Well, I mean, look, you know what? You played first base, yeah, so I'll ask you. That was contact, right? Marcus Semien's running in contact.
It was. A little bit of that, too. Marcus Semien had a really good jump off of third base. He looked like he was three-quarters of the way to home already. You have to come up with that ball clean right out of the gate and throw a strike to home plate. I don't think that's what Freddie Freeman did. The exchange from the glove to his hand looked like he bobbled a little. Once you bobble, the first, and then the pitcher's not covered first base, you basically are just holding the ball and live to fight another day. It's one of those things. But you tip your hat to Marcus Semien. Marcus Semien's going on contact. You get a big, you get a halfway decent-sized lead. You get a bigger secondary lead. As soon as your front foot hits the ground, you should be on your way to home plate after the ball's been put in play. And it worked out for the Blue Jays. You know, the Jonathan Davis thing, I've said this to you before, didn't have any outcome to do with the game last night because of mentor and what he was doing on the mound, which is the hesitation at this level where everything's a little bit quicker, right? And that's what you're seeing a little bit from Jonathan Davis is when he's on the bases. Why is he in the big leagues, Jeff? Play defense, and he can run the bases. Well, we saw last night with almost getting picked off second base, that could have cost them the game. The getting thrown out of home plate when your cleanup hitter standing on the on-deck circle. It's little things like that that, you know, don't seem to matter to us because they did win the game. But a manager like Charlie Montoya sitting over there going, okay, we've seen this before. Do I really want to put Jonathan Davis in the game late to run the bases when we're seeing sort of the mental mistakes and the not having good field awareness and all these kind of things? You want to be a bench player. You want to stay in the big leagues for a long time. What do? You don't make mistakes defensively. You don't make mistakes running the bases, and you learn how to hit velocity. And if Jonathan Davis wants to stay in the big leagues, he's got to get a little bit better at all three of those.
416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590, 590-590 is a text line. It is walk-off Wednesday. We will get back to the lines after our break. Tom Glavine joins us. This is Baseball Central. *590, 590 is the text line. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. 720 tonight, first pitch, Hyunjin Ryu. Spit it out, Jeffrey.
Don't let it beat you.
On the mound for the Blue Jays, Max Fried for the Atlanta Braves. Tomorrow will be Ross Stripling. Light a candle, folks. Ross Stripling's taking the mound tomorrow against Charlie Morton. And that'll be a 12:20 p.m. first pitch. We will be on the air from 12 to 12:20. We will be on the air afterwards. Right up to Tim and friends, Jeffrey and Aurora. You want to talk about the Jays battery? I'm intrigued where you want to go with this. Go ahead, my friend.
Sure. So in this team, we've already seen personal catchers. You know, Hyunjin Ryu likes to catch to Danny Jansen. Robbie Ray prefers Alejandro Kirk right now. Obviously, we saw last night was his first with McGuire, at least this year. How much of this is, as much as I encourage it, how much is it defendable in a in an era of stats? And are the results great enough that you can justify it?
I'm going to pass you over to Mr. Barker for this one. Thanks, man. That was a good question.
Yeah, it is. That's a solid question. Look, that's one of those things you'd have, probably have to walk up and ask Robbie Ray or Hyunjin Ryu.
Well, if I can just jump in, Kev. I mean, look at the look at the issue the Yankees had with Garrett Cole and Gary Sanchez and Kyle Higashioka.
You know what it is, too? It's a lot of that conviction thing. When the catcher puts the sign down, that pitcher has to have great conviction in what he wants to throw and trust him enough to say, you really want me to throw two sliders back-to-back to a guy that's pretty good at hitting a slider? That's the thing. And Ray seems to like Kirk. He's comfortable. And a lot of it, too, has to do with the target. That target just looks good for me to throw to. And the Danny Jansen and the mental thing and the back and forth. You've actually seen Ryu and Danny Jansen sitting over there two innings after Ryu's came out of the game, flipping through the iPad, looking at an at-bat that happened in the first or second inning when Danny Jansen's still trying to get hits.
But it's gotten better.
It has
between those two. It's gotten better.
Most of it is Danny Jansen's used to it, and it's not a big deal anymore, and it's not overwhelming. That's what it is, too. And look, you want the pitcher comfortable. The more comfortable he is, the more chances he's got of filling up the strike zone with multiple pitches, and the longer he's going to go in the game and give your team a chance to win. And that's ultimately what it's about. Now, can you equate that to any stat known to man? Who knows? I don't know if there's a there's a stat that has anything to do with being comfortable with somebody and trusting in somebody. But being a pitcher-catcher relationship, I would think that's a big deal.
You know, I've always kind of thought that you know, when you talk to a manager about it, any manager, their first reaction is, well, we would prefer that wasn't the case. But, dude, let's be clear. If you're paying Hyunjin Ryu a ton of money and he has a preference, he's going to get his guy, you know, when all possible. I mean, clearly, if a guy gets hurt or if a guy isn't feeling well, you can't do that. But I don't have a problem, frankly, with allowing my stud pitcher, right? Yeah. My stud pitchers to determine or to ask for who they want to catch. Now, I mean, if Anthony Kay goes to Charlie and says, you know, I just like throwing to Reese McGuire, my response is, you know who we'd really like to see you throwing to? Riley Adams. He and Trenton. See ya. Get your ass out of here. So you do that.
Yeah.
But
don't forget, Jeff, too, that the pitchers are and baseball players are very superstitious. If something's working with a certain person, you know, they don't want to go against that and have somebody else catching them. They want that guy that they had great luck with.
But
it
is
blaming for it.
It's an interesting question that was asked because it kind of I'm sure there are. Look, if I can go to you and I can give you evidence that when I have guy A catching me and my ERA is 2.35 and I've got guy B catching me and my ERA is 6.62.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's a body of evidence, and I'm not just talking about one game or two games, if there's a body of evidence, then I think, okay, there's yeah. something there. But it's tough because now you're getting into things like feel, relationships, mm-hmm. trust, and it's hard to put how do you slap an analytic number on whether or not a dude trusts one guy over another?
Yeah, okay. Look
you
at
can't.
Look at Ray and Reese McGuire last night in the first inning. You could tell that Ray, whenever Reese would put down sign after sign and he would continue to stare at Reese McGuire, he didn't like what he was putting down. And the flow and the tempo of the game and what he was trying to do on the mound, because Robbie Ray is a basically get it and go guy. He didn't want to stand out there and do a bunch of thinking. And in the first inning, he was having to do that, and that was why, for me, it looked like mechanically he was a little out of whack. He just needs that guy to put it down, conviction, I want to throw it, and I'm going to let it eat as hard as I can, and we're going to repeat that over and over and over again, and we're going to continue to get a bunch of people out. I just like it because they have trust in each other, and it's working.
This is from Rick and Markham. It's a question, Barker. I always thought when your big slugger was up at the plate, you know, a guy stealing bases, take the bat out of his hand. Springer's first game, he was on second. Vladdy was up, he stole a third to protect them. Flatly struck out. You've seen the same thing before. How do you feel about that? You know, about taking the, is there such a thing, and we've got Tom with us, so let's answer the question quickly. Is there such a thing as taking the bat out of the guy's hand, do you think?
Yeah, I think it is. I think a lot has to do with who's hitting and where they're at as a hitter. If they're struggling, you might put a little pressure and make it a little easier for him to have a productive at bat. But look, it's like last night, Jonathan Davis gets thrown out of home plate with your cleanup hitter on the on-deck circle. That, it, for me, is a no-no. You never want to see that happen.
All right, we are very pleased to be joined by Hall of Fame pitcher, Braves analyst Tom Glavine. Tom, thanks so much for joining us on Baseball Central today. We appreciate your time. We trust that you're doing well. Before we talk about the Braves, I did want to ask you something about sort of something we're going through in Toronto right now, which is Nate Pearson, their top pitching prospect, came up from AAA after one good start at AAA. Scuffled at the major league level, and you know the debate was, all right, do you keep him up here, let him work with the major league pitching coach, let him try to figure it out up here? The Jays frankly have no better options. It's not like he's keeping somebody else out of the rotation they have any long-term plans for. Or do you send him back down? Now the Jays have sent him back down to AAA, and they've got kind of a nice little competition going between him and another kid, Alec Manoah. So I wanted to ask you, look, you were part of one of the best homegrown staffs anybody has ever seen. How do you view when is the right time to send a prospect out and when isn't a right time to send him out? You know, a guy that everybody's talked about as being the best pitching prospect in the organization for 2 years, number three in baseball, all that stuff.
And so let me get this straight, or make sure I heard you correctly. He's had one AAA start, and then he got called up to the big leagues?
One AAA start this year and got called up to the big leagues, and then they sent him down.
Okay, so was that his only AAA start? Was he there last year?
He was hurt for much of last year. He hasn't. He's only pitched. Kevin, how many innings has he pitched professionally? Not many.
Yeah, not a lot. No.
Yeah. No, and look, I think that's you're starting to see more and more of that at the big league level, right? I mean, I know, like, I look at my own career. You know, I went the gamut of the minor leagues, right? I played a half a year in rookie ball when I got drafted. I played a full year in A ball, played a half a year in Double A, and then the other half of the year in Triple A, the next half of the year in Triple A. So, I mean, I had some innings under my belt by the time I got to the big leagues. I think you're seeing less and less of that now. I don't want to say kids are getting rushed to the big leagues, but they are a little bit, and I think it's more of an economic issue than it ever was when I was coming through systems. So I get that to a certain extent, but I guess the big question you have to answer is, you know, what are you in, so to speak, as an organization at the big league level? Are you a team that really and truly believes you have a chance to win your division and go into the playoffs? Or are you a team that's kind of on the periphery of that and you're more trying to develop your players? I know for me, when I got called up to the big leagues, the Braves were terrible. And me going out there pitching, and I got my brains bashed in, no question about it. But me going out there to pitch was not about the organization winning. It was about me getting better and me developing, along with a lot of the other prospects that were doing that at the same time. If you don't have that luxury at the big league level, it's a little bit tougher call, right? You can't, you can't necessarily let guys go out there with the mindset of developing if you're honestly trying to win as an organization. So that's a little bit tougher call. But I think, too, it depends on the individual. If you know, a lot of what I hear, why the Braves allowed me to get to the big leagues initially and then spend a full year in the big leagues in 1988 and lose 17 games was because mentally they knew I could handle it. You know, they knew I had the makeup that wasn't going to derail me. So I think that has to be part of it too. You know, what's the makeup of the kid? How's he going to deal with failure? Because let's face it, there aren't many guys that come to the big leagues as pitchers or players for that matter, but particularly pitchers just go out there and just have nothing but success. You're gonna get your brains bashed in a little bit. So that's part of the equation too. But I would venture to say that in Toronto, from what I have seen, and I did the Braves-Toronto series last weekend when Toronto swept the Braves, they got a sneaky good club. And I think they're a team that is kind of on the periphery or is definitely on the periphery of having a chance to win that American League East. And I only say they're on the periphery because I think they're a team a lot of people don't know about. They don't know much about them. Having seen that team firsthand, I think they got a legitimate chance to surprise some people. They can hit. Their starting rotation is pretty good. I know it was banged up when we saw them, but that bullpen's really good too. And that may factor into their equation a little bit as well.
Tom, do you have any idea, would it be possible for a young guy like a Nate Pearson who came to the big leagues, got hit around in one game, and knows that he has to work on mound presence and self-correcting? Those two things, is he capable of going to the minor leagues and teaching himself how to correct two things of that nature?
I mean, I think you can. You know, look, if he's, again, and I don't know much about him. I don't know what he's done at the minor league level. But if he's only going in the minor league level and having success, well, then it's hard to work on your mound presence when the biggest thing you have to work on is dealing with failure, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard. But I think you can tell a kid that when you send him back down, hey, here's the things that we need you to work on. And, oh, by the way, one of them is your mound presence, you know? Have a little bit more of a, lack of a better word, maybe a stoic presence on the mound. You know, don't get so emotional if you have a bad result or you make a bad pitch or an umpire makes a bad call. You know, we used to have Mike Foltynewicz was here in Atlanta, and that was his biggest thing, right? It was his mound presence. He would get a bad call from the umpire. He would wear it on his sleeve. And then the next thing you know, an inning would unravel on him. So I think you can, and he was sent down, And he was sent down, and part of what he was told was, listen, you got to work on that. And he, to his credit, when he came back, he was much better. So I think you can make guys aware of it. I think you have to make guys aware of it if it's truly something you want them to work on. But then it has to be the kind of thing that somebody has to be willing to have that difficult conversation after every start and break down potential instances within that start that were maybe not what we're looking for as an organization, and in order to call those things out to him so he's aware of it.
Tom, how much are the Braves missing Mike Soroka?
I think they're missing him quite a bit, really. You know, it just gives them more stability. Now, I think having Max Fried back in the mix certainly helps. But, you know, look, you take any team and you take their top two starters out of the rotation, and there's going to be some struggles, right? We always talk about, and by we, I think it's, you know, people that are around teams, people that have played the game, people who understand kind of the dynamics of it. It's easy to say, well, we took our number one and our number two are hurt. That just means that, you know, number three and number four has to step up, and whoever else we put in the rotation has to do a good job. Well, that's not that easy, right? It's like taking a guy who's the eighth inning guy and inserting him in the closer role because the closer got hurt. It's not the same. And I know it's hard for people to understand that, but it's just the way it is, right? So when you have your number one and your number two out of the rotation, it bumps everybody up, so everybody else up, so to speak. So now your number three is your number one. Your number four is your number two. Well, there's a reason those guys were 3, 4, and 5 in the first place, right? And a lot of times now you're asking your 3, 4, and 5 guys to go out and compete against other teams 1, 2, and 3s. So maybe the matchups are not as good. And then you're hoping for guys on the back end to step up. So, look, I like the Braves rotation. Even now, you know, with Fried and Martin and Enoa and, you know, Bryce Wilson threw a good ball game last night. Smiley was a little bit better his last time out. So I think there's some quality depth there. But there's no question if you insert Soroka in the mix, and even from a psychological standpoint, now you've got your number one and number two in the rotation, and it makes the Braves rotation really deep. Look, if you have Soroka and Fried, there aren't many teams that can match the Braves 1 through 5. Their depth is really good. But again, I think probably one of the other big things with Soroka, he for a young guy, has had the ability to go out and pitch deep into ball games every time he goes out there. And you can't emphasize enough what that does to resting a bullpen that's pitching virtually every night. And I do think they missed that part.
Okay, Tom, if you're first inning, if you're pitching against Ronald Acuna Jr., what do you throw him to get him out, and what do you never want to throw him?
Well, I mean, I think the big thing with Ronald is you have to be careful of same pitch, same location too often. You know, I don't see a ton of guys double up on him. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could, maybe you should. I certainly wouldn't triple up on him. I mean, look, he's obviously a guy that if the ball's out over the plate, he's gonna hit it hard. Now, if you're fortunate enough that he hits it hard and it stays in the ballpark and it's hit at somebody or is only a base hit, then, you know, to some extent, that's a moral victory. I think one of the things we've seen a lot of, and I think it's a big reason why Ronald gets frustrated when he gets hit by pitches, is you have to pitch him in. There is no way you are going to get him out consistently if you don't make him conscious on the inside part of the plate. And he's got a little bit of a spot, and to his credit, he's gotten way better at it, but he's got a little bit of a spot in above his hands where he can't quite get to that pitch consistently. Now, like I said, he's done a better job this year of fighting those pitches off and staying and keeping bats alive. The problem is the more guys go in there, the more risk they run of making a mistake, and that's the double-edged sword. You go in, you try to go in there, and you leave it middle in, he's going to crush that ball. So, you know, I think you really have to make him conscious in, and then you've got a chance maybe to expand the zone away. But, look, he's just a good hitter. He's one of those guys that, you know, you're going to have to make quality pitches to get him out. He's not going to get himself out very much.
Tom, really good of you to do this. Thank you for your time. You know, we value it. We appreciate it. And we trust that you stay safe and keep well, my friend.
Thanks, Tom.
I will. You guys do the same. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. That's Tom Glavin, Hall of Fame pitcher and Braves analyst. That was one of the real I say it every time we have him on, but being able to watch him, Maddox, and Smoltz, and the Expos shared spring training facilities with the Braves, so they were just across the field.
Massaging the outside part of the plate. That's what they did better than anybody else. You know, the umpire would give them a little bit more, they'd take a little bit more.
Yeah.
And for them to throw it exactly where they wanted to all the time was pretty impressive for as long as they did it.
And it is, you know, Tom's a good guy to talk about. They go back, call up your baseball reference and take a look. I've talked about what Greg Maddux had his you-know-what beaten in but when he came into the majors. Mm-hmm. Same with Tom Glavin. But as Glavin said, you got to know the guy. And maybe that's something, you know, we're not there, but maybe that's something with Nate Pearson.
Yeah.
You got to know the guy, right? How does a guy handle failure?
Yeah.
You got to know the guy.
We're going to find out.
We certainly will. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590, 590-590 is the text line. We'll go back to the lines, talk a little Marcus Semien as well. He's on a roll. This is Baseball Central. All right, welcome back to Baseball Central. Several of you on 590, 590, the text line, pointing out that Jonathan Davis said after the game that Luis Rivera waved him home from third in the play. So there you go, Barker.
Okay, well, that
you don't listen to your own post-game interviews.
Two things there. Well, I was on Blue Jays talk, so I was doing another job while Hazel was talking. So that I would say that. There's two things there. First one, that's really bad third base coaching. You should never do that with your cleanup hitter standing on the on-deck circle and you're already up two runs. But if I'm a really good base runner, I shouldn't need my third base coach to tell me when to run home. Mm-hmm. I'm not jumping all over Jonathan Davis because they won the game and so what? But if you're in the big leagues and you want to stay in the big leagues, it's situations like that you need to look at what's going on around you and understand that I don't need the third base coach telling me when I need to run and when I don't need to run.
Jamie and Milton. Hey, boys, love the show. Just wanted to say I feel that Alec should be brought up if he's a solid start tonight. Alec Manoa is starting tonight. A reminder, Jeff Ware, the AAA pitching coach, will join Brent and myself on Writer's Block. And again, Jamie and Milton saying he thinks that Manoa should be brought up. And Jamie, thanks for the nice words at the end of your text as well. Well, I mean, this is a situation they've created, Kevin, is if Alec Manoa goes out tonight and dominates, what do you do? I mean, you've already brought Nate Pearson up after one good, it was okay, after one okay start.
Mm-hmm.
Are you worried about sending any sort of message now? And even let's say Alec Manoa has a good game. Let's say he has two starts, two really good starts. Hey, haven't you sent a message? Do you not have to bring him up, knowing you've already brought Nate Pearson up?
Here's what I think. I think the reason why they sent Nate Pearson down is because of mound presence and fastball command.
Mm-hmm.
What we've seen from Alec Manoa is just the opposite of that. So if he continues to do those two things, and he can get people out and do it efficiently and have no walks and go deeper into games. You know, all the experiments that they're having, why experiment with something when something's standing right in front of you? But that's just me.
Let's go to Max from Toronto. Max from Toronto, he's heard a lot of Pete Walker love. Pete Walker's been around the organization for a gazillion years. And Max, you got a question about Pete Walker, I think.
Yeah, guys. I think I'm just getting cranky in my old age, and I've just noticed there's a lot of adoration from the Toronto media for Pete Walker, and I think I'm on an island here, but we have two starters, and neither one of them are homegrown, and for all the credit he gets for Ray, why isn't there the same responsibility to sort out their blue-chip stud pitcher? Mm. And there's a stack of notable pitchers. I think you can throw Dickey in there, Josh Johnson, Romero, Sanchez, Kyle Drabek, that have either had declines or fallen completely off the... So I just think there needs to be a little balance with this man crush that everyone seems to have for Pete Walker. I'm sure I think he's a very good pitching coach, but I just... been rolling my eyes a little bit the last little while. No, I think I'm on an island, but I'd like to hear what you guys think.
I mean, you know, here's the thing. You're certainly entitled to your opinion. Everybody likes Pete Walker for a variety of reasons. I will say this, though. Pete Walker can only work with what he gets. And you know, Pete Walker isn't the guy telling them, bring Nate Pearson up. That's the analytics department. That's a collaborative thing. So, you know, the question about the development of the younger pitchers, yeah, there's a certain amount of development that takes place at the major league level. But you can only work with what you're given. You're right about a lot of the other pitchers who have come over here. I would argue R.A. Dickey was probably at the end of his career anyhow. Kyle Drabek, Aaron Sanchez, they have had a hard time finishing off starting pitchers at this level. I think Max is entirely right about that.
Yeah, and you could say that the outcome of Pete Walker and where he's going to end up as a pitching coach for the Toronto Blue Jays will probably be hanging his hat on Nate Pearson. Where Nate Pearson ends up is where probably Pete Walker will end up.
Oh, listen, I think Max, it's
a solid question.
It's a solid observation. Clifton and Etobicoke, you walked us off, my friend.
Stroman, he seemed like a claiming horse. So you didn't have to protect him. So maybe they have this thing backwards. If they allowed these kids to stay at the major leagues and straighten out, the bugs, like Kevin was saying, they have the best pitching coach on the staff. Like, why would you want to send these guys back down to the minors when the best help is right here? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.